Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just 15 bucks a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Made by Mamas, the podcast. I'm Zoe.
And I'm Georgia.
And we're here talking all things parenthood. You know, the real conversations.
Tips and tricks.
Products we love.
And brands we can't live without.
Let's get into it.
Hello. Monday morning again. Here we are.
Here we are. Are you all right? Have you survived the cold over the weekend?
Do you know what? I'm good. I'm not too much to report. I actually had a pretty chilled weekend, which
did you get
I
drunk?
Never come on and say. On Friday, I did, but I had 2 days to recover. So actually, that is the way to go. Anyone listening? Friday evening is a great day to get drunk because you
Friday
have
night's
Saturday
the
and
night.
Sunday to recover. There we go. How about you? How are you?
I'm good. I have been solo parenting this weekend because Doslad went for a little cheeky boys trip to the mountains. And I've got to be honest with you, hats off to anybody that does it all the time, because I had the fear around being alone with my children.
Did you?
I looked after them for 3 nights for a really long time, just me and them.
Yeah.
Do I know how to do it? Like, am I going to be exhausted? Like, I'm solely in charge of them. You know, just sort of weird, irrational fears. Of course, I know exactly what I'm doing. Well, who am I kidding? I don't know what the
fuck. No one knows what they're doing.
No one knows what they're doing, but it was all fine. But I tell you what the weirdest thing was, and I'm hoping that somebody listening will relate to this. Doing 3 nights alone in my house freaked me out. It was almost like I was in Megan, the hot new horror movie that's come out. Like, I was freaking out all over the place. Like, every time I heard a knock or a creak in the night, I was like, who's there?
But you're scared of the dark, aren't you?
Yeah. Basically, I think I'm going to get attacked and murdered in my own home every second that I'm here alone. So even in the day, I'm not that comfortable.
Maybe need a dog. I think you might need a dog.
So what I did was I went to get Luna. So I put her to bed. And then at 10 o'clock when I went to bed, I just went, Luna, do you want to come sleep with mummy? Basically used my six-year-old as protection.
It's supposed to be the kids that do that.
Like,
literally supposed to be the kids that do that, not the grown-ups.
Is there someone that I could speak to about this fear? Should I go and get hypnotized?
I think it's a good idea. I think you need to get a dog, a nightlight, and a weighted blanket.
Okay.
No, I'm joking.
That would freak. I wouldn't be able to get up if someone
gets coming. It helps with your anxiety.
Oh, God. Anyway, answers on a postcard. If anyone could message me about what you think I should do about it.
Anyone, got any advice for adults who are scared of the dark, send it in.
So we got to get into today's chat because it was actually a really meaty one and it was a really, really powerful conversation. We realised that we haven't actually had a chat around this subject before, and we definitely haven't had anyone come on and be so honest, I guess, about it. I thought she was incredibly brave.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also think that, you know, her experience is very recent and also, gosh, like one that we can all relate to. Like, you can totally understand how, you know, this happens every day when we become parents and we kind of put ourselves, you know, down the list and sort of forget about those things that we need to stay on top of. Mm-hmm. And I'm really glad we've had this chat because, you know, people listening to this will absolutely know what we mean when we get into it.
Yeah. And she says it at the end, we'll discuss it after the chat, but really, if this helps one person today, then she's done her job. So George, let's let everyone listen to it. Who are we chatting to today?
We are chatting to the incredible Jo Wilson.
very excited about this conversation today. Both Georgia and I think it's going to be a really powerful chat. Broadcaster, TV presenter, Sky Sports news host, mum to a 2.5-year-old called Mabel. Please welcome Jo Wilson to the podcast.
How are you, Jo? We've got quite a serious discussion today, but let's just get into how are you in this moment.
No, I'm good. I'm good. Mabel slept through two nights in a row. Touch wood. Well, I'm actually feeling like I've had a bit of sleep for a change, which is good.
She's not a great sleeper.
She's not a great sleeper. No, never has been.
And she's two, we said 2.5. And so is this, how many times has she slept through the night?
So I would say the first time she slept through the night was when she was about 18 months old. And then she went through a period where she slept through for, a good few months. And now it's just a bit of a lottery. So we were kind of she would wake up maybe once every, we would get two nights of waking up, then one night of sleeping through. Two nights of waking up, one night of sleeping through.
It's so unfair that.
Yeah.
Georgia and I have endless discussions, Jo, because we reckon if we could come up with the formula that solved all the children who wake up in the night, we would be billionaires.
Absolutely.
And we would be living on a yacht in Ibiza somewhere.
Yeah.
We would. And we probably wouldn't be doing this podcast now, Jackie.
We wouldn't be here today.
We're still trying to work that out. We're not sure. We're not really getting anywhere.
What's really annoying as well is when your child isn't sleeping, and I know that people obviously only offer advice about sleep because they care and they want to help, but then they go like, oh, is she sleeping in socks? Have you given her a snack before bed? You know, is she too hot? Is she too cold? Have you tried Marmite and cricket juice? And you're like, I've tried everything.
Yeah, but the thing is, when you do something and it works, you then try and repeat that every night, and you feel like, oh, shit, she didn't have that half a breadstick that she had that one night that she slept through. Right, okay, shit, what are we going to do? Should we wake her up and give her the half a breadstick?
It's very true. It won't be forever, Jo. Hang on in
it
there.
Won't. Exactly. It really, really won't.
Now, you've got such a brilliantly powerful story. When, when we were sort of chatting about people coming on the podcast and your name came up, we felt, compelled to get you on because it's something that I reckon I wouldn't like to hazard a guess on a percentage of people that have dodged their smears or put off their smears, but it is a conversation that we do have a lot. And, we'd really love you to kind of talk us through what happened, the start of your journey to where you are now.
Yeah, so basically last summer, so it was the end of June, I got diagnosed with cervical cancer. It was a massive shock, as you can imagine. It's just not something that you ever expect to happen to you. As much as you hear, cancer affects 1 in 2 people now, you still don't look at yourself and think you look like someone who would ever get cancer, which, it sounds ridiculous to say it, but I just don't think anyone ever expects it to happen to them.
No.
And I, if we go back even further, I didn't really have any symptoms. I had Mabel at the end of September 2020. And there were a few things when I was pregnant, like I had a few unexplained bleeds when I was pregnant. Mm. But that was just put down to something that can happen when you're pregnant. I had a bit of a traumatic birth. So basically I was in labour for 3.5 days. I was eventually induced because just things, even though I was having contractions every 10 minutes for those 3.5 days, it just wasn't progressing at all. So they eventually induced me. And it was just a really horrible experience where afterwards they kind of said, my cervix wasn't opening properly. So there were kind of signs there, when you think, the reason for the bleeds, the reason for my cervix not opening properly. But you just don't really think anything of it because everything is just put down to just something that can happen. People have long labours and kind of traumatic births. But I think because of that traumatic birth experience where, it ended in a forceps delivery, there was a period where the doctors were in working on me because my heart rate had completely gone through the roof. And if you speak to my partner, he'll tell you, apparently like my eyes were rolling into the back of my head and things like that.
God.
Like everyone was
scary.
Just like, what is going on here? And it's kind of blurry to me. Obviously because, all these things were happening. And then when Mabel came out, she wasn't breathing. So they were working on her for a while. And it was just, it was not a great experience. We both got sepsis. So we had to stay in hospital for a few days afterwards.
How do you get sepsis, by the way?
And how did you both get it?
Well, now I realise my waters broke really early on. So on the, I think it was the Saturday night I went into labour, my waters broke literally 4 hours after the contraction started. And they recently changed the rules around that. So if it had been a few months earlier, the rules were your waters break, you have to give birth within 24 hours because the risk of infection is so high.
Is that not a thing anymore?
So it's not. It's now 72 hours.
Yeah, so when I was in labour with Luna, my waters broke and I was a 3-dayer as well,
right,
Jo.
Okay,
they just let me run, but my, you know, then they thought she had, there was, you know, infection, jaundice, all that kind of stuff because the waters had broken, but it was such a long time till I actually gave birth to her.
Right.
So where is it now?
So it's now the 72 hours.
Wow.
So that was why when my waters broke, it was like the Sunday morning. They didn't induce me until the Tuesday morning because it was allowed to be 72 hours. But I mean, if you count, I think it was about 90 hours actually. If you,
oh my gosh.
So no one has said to me, that's why you got sepsis. But, you know, good old Google, you know, to me, it's quite obvious. That's why. But yeah, so that was another thing. There was a few days in hospital afterwards where you're just, and because it was COVID times, I was completely on my own. My partner was allowed to visit for an hour a day for those 3 days afterwards.
And Jesus.
It was just overall a very, not a great experience.
No. And a lot to take in, like going through all of that and then then you've got a baby to look after.
Yeah. What on earth do you do with this little thing that you now have to look after when you're, you know, I'd been stitched up, I'd had an episiotomy and you're in a lot of pain.
Yeah. Exhausted.
And then, yeah, suddenly just, wow, I've got to look after this baby in a hospital bed where, you know, it's not comfortable when you're in hospital for those days afterwards.
Yeah.
I was in a ward, so I could hear the woman around me. There was one next to me just watching TV the whole time. Like, you're like, I just want to sleep.
Yeah.
Put your TV off. And yeah, just, yeah, not great. But anyway, you know, you get home eventually. And that was lovely to come home. And I think just the focus of, you know, when you give birth, it's the baby, isn't it? It's not really on you. So that was kind of where my focus then went. And I didn't feel great, but I'd had a baby. And I think a lot of people will be the same. Like, you're tired because you've got a baby. You're not sleeping. Mm-hmm. When I went back to work, I was doing early shifts. I was getting up at 3:30 in the morning to go to work. So that kind of added to the fact that I was feeling so tired. So whether or not that was a symptom of the cancer or whether it's just life, you just don't really know. And then the other thing was when my periods came back, they came back pretty heavy and they were quite close together, I would say. Now, that was something I spoke to my health visitor about and was reassured that that is just, again, something that can happen after you have a baby.
Which I imagine is correct.
It absolutely is correct. But it's also a symptom of cervical cancer. And I feel like that is just perhaps where a little bit more education is maybe needed, where midwife, this is by no means me saying anything bad about the NHS because throughout my cancer treatment and everything, they have been amazing.
We understand, yeah.
But it maybe is just something that somebody somewhere could have said, actually, this can be a symptom of cervical cancer as well. Have you had your smear test? Are you up to date? Go. And I get the onus is also on me to do that, but it just wasn't in my thinking.
So do we know, Jo, once you've given birth, is there a time limit on when you should go and have your smear test after you give birth? Is it within a certain amount of time?
No, I mean, it totally depends on your own history of smear tests. So in England, it's every 3 years.
Yes.
So my smear test was actually due probably, I think, when I was about 3 or 4 months pregnant.
Mm.
So I think it's then, once you give birth, you can have one after 3 months. So they wouldn't give you one straight away, but I think that may not be completely factually correct. That's maybe something I would need to check, but I'm pretty sure.
So if you're due one when you're pregnant, you should go as soon as you're allowed.
As soon as you're allowed, which I think is 3 months after you give birth.
Okay, so that made you a year late for your smear test.
Exactly.
You're thinking. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So yeah, it got to the point where I thought, right, I need to go for my smear test because it's due. also this thing with my periods just being quite heavy and close together, and they got heavier and heavier. And you know when there's just something in you that you're like, even though I've been told this is something that can happen, I think I need to get checked out.
So
I made an appointment. I actually went privately to a gynecologist because I thought I need my smear test, but I would also just like a bit of reassurance as to just that everything's okay after what I'd been through. It was kind of, I was being examined, and you know when you can just kind of tell there's something not right here from her reaction.
So while she was doing your smear test, she could tell straight away.
Yeah, she kind of was like, she kind of went, and I was like, oh, that doesn't sound great.
What do those noises mean?
Exactly. And she said, her words were, it's something's not looking normal. And then once she'd done it, she kind of cleaned up, and she said, right, just get changed and come through once you're changed. And then when I went through to the other room, there was another nurse that she'd brought in. And you think, this is a bit strange. Like, why is there someone else here now? And she said, I'm really sorry to tell you, but I think you have cervical cancer.
Jesus
and it
Christ.
Was just, you know, just like that. And
oh
you just think,
gosh.
Sorry. And like, I'd gone on my own because you kind of, well,
yeah.
Why would you take your partner to your smear test, you know? And I mean, she did say, she said, it might not be, but she was, I want to be completely honest with you.
Yeah.
What could she see?
What could
I
she
guess,
see?
Like,
yeah.
You know, when you go for a smear test, you usually wait for your results, don't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you're like, oh, yeah. Like,
she basically what? Said, my cervix just didn't look normal. Now, okay. What that means, I don't know. Whether she could see a tumour, I don't know. I didn't ask that, but she just said it didn't look normal.
Joe, were there any other symptoms? So we were talking about the periods being heavy and a little bit closer together. Was there any discharge? Was there any smell? Was there any pain during sex? I guess it was only 3 months after you'd given birth, so potentially you might not have had sex for a while, but was there anything else that was triggering your concerns
at that point?
There
was nothing at all, no. And I think that is the thing with a cancer like this is, you know, you need the symptoms are unusual bleeding, unusual discharge, pain or bleeding during or after sex. They're the ones that we all know about. It's things like pain when you go for a wee, that can be a symptom.
Right.
But there can also be no symptoms. You know, through research that I've done and speaking to other girls that I've met on social media and things that are going through something similar and reading other people's stories, the amount that say actually they didn't have symptoms.
God.
And that is why smear tests are so important.
Yes.
And that's kind of, you know, I think we all know smear tests are important, but we also all put them off.
And also, yeah. Like you say as well, like if you've had, I mean, I didn't go for a smear test. So I probably didn't have one for 5 years because I had Axel. Then I got pregnant with Gigi maybe 2 and a bit years later or whatever it was. Then I had Gigi. And then I probably it was 5 years, I reckon. I didn't have one.
Just yep, same,
because,
George.
And also, like, when your mind, I guess, like you, like you're saying, when you become a parent, your mind sort of goes away from you for a while, a good while, I'd say, and your focus is just on the children. So it's so easy to do. Like, it's so easy to just think, oh, I'll do it. I'll go another time.
The amount of people that have got in touch with me since, because I kind of felt a little bit a bit ashamed, a bit embarrassed, because I was like, oh my goodness, everyone's going to know that I didn't go for my smear tests when I should have gone for my smear test. And that sounds silly, but I was a bit embarrassed about it. But then the amount of people that got in touch with me afterwards to be like, oh my goodness, I've booked my smear test now because I'm overdue.
Yeah.
People in similar situations that their smears were due before they got pregnant, they put it off. They've now got an 18-month-old. They went for their smear test. And, you know, the majority of people will go and they'll be fine.
Yeah.
They won't have cervical cancer. Like, this is a very rare thing to happen. I'm just one of the kind of unlucky ones.
It's very interesting that you mentioned sort of shame and embarrassment there, Joe, because I you know, I was lucky. I had a normal result on my smear, but like Georgia, I put it off and, you know, had the babies, and then there was a traumatic birth quite similar to your story, and then I got pregnant again with Kit and didn't have, you know, and then I went for one recently. I was really ashamed. I was sitting there thinking, what the fuck? Like, I could have cancer here and it's my fault and I should have been more grown up about it or on top of it or whatever you want to call it. And luckily it was all right. But I definitely felt a bit stupid. Like, come on, like you should have gone. This has to be our responsibility. But I think when you've been through everything that you've described, especially if you've had a traumatic birth, you don't want somebody poking and fiddling around. And, you know, it's just, you just want to heal at home.
Yeah. And I think that's, you know, what weeks like this are all about with it. It's Cervical Cancer Prevention Week. And one of the charities that I've been talking to and working with, they're called Joe's Trust, which is, you know, it's, I know it's my name, where you just think that's mad when it's linked like that. But it was set up in memory of a woman called Joe that had a really terrible experience with misdiagnosis and things, and eventually died of cervical cancer. And I've been chatting with them, and they're doing so much work to try and end cervical cancer. This is their thing, which it sounds almost, for me, I found that quite triggering initially, because I was like, I've done something wrong and that's why cervical cancer still exists. But actually, we do have to take responsibility. We have to go for our smear test. But there's loads of other things as well, with things like vaccines for the HPV. You know, we're of a generation, I guess, as well. You know, I was too old.
I didn't have to.
But the uptake is less than 60%.
Right.
So it's just about educating people to get your daughters vaccinated when they're eligible to do it.
Why do you think it's only 60%?
I really don't know.
Does it not happen at school?
Well,
no,
yeah.
It does.
Yeah.
I think it does. And I don't know whether it's the lack of education, where people are maybe not educated as to what this HPV, because most cervical cancers are caused by the HPV virus.
Okay.
Most people can get rid of most people have HPV, but their bodies deal with it and get rid of it. And I just wonder if there's a lack of education and understanding around this virus and the fact that it causes most cervical cancers. So therefore, if you get vaccinated against it, it's, you know, your chances of getting cervical cancer are even lower.
Right.
So there's that factor, you know, educating people about the vaccine. And also, I just think with kind of postnatal care, there needs to be some kind of education as well around midwives, health visitors. Even, I don't know how you guys found it, but that 6-week check that you have with your GP.
What a waste of time. Sorry.
Yeah, and like the one thing they seem to want to know is, what contraception are you going to go on?
Yeah, I know.
The non-sex contraception.
Yes, exactly.
The kind where it would be a miracle
honestly. But you think, where's the physical examination if you want one? The checking your stitches, the asking about your birth. Like, I feel if someone had maybe gone over my birth notes, they may have picked out things. Like, my consultant, my cancer consultant was amazing, and I've not spoken to him about it yet, but he was like, I'm going to go through your birth notes and try and find some answers, because he thinks there very much is a link to the things that happened and having cancer. So it's kind of like, if someone had done some kind of post-birth briefing with me, perhaps they would have thought, right, yeah. And that would have pushed me to be examined earlier. And, you know, I was diagnosed with stage 3C, which meant it had spread to my lymph nodes. And that's basically the stage before it becomes terminal.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That's frightening.
It is frightening.
Can we just go back to, you know, you've gone for a smear test and you've kind of just wanted a bit of reassurance that everything's all right. And then they say to you, I think you've got cancer, when you've got quite a young child. What happens? What in your head, what was going on?
Yeah, I mean, you just feel like you've been hit by a truck or something. It was like unbelievable. I mean, I started crying, obviously. I think it was just like the shock. And then, you know, the first question I asked was, you know, am I going to die? Which maybe sounds ridiculous, but
no,
you hear cancer, you just think, what? Like, am I going to die? And she was great. She was like, you know, she managed to get me in for a colposcopy or whatever it's called, which is obviously the further examination that you need so they can take biopsies and to confirm that it is actually cervical cancer, 2 days later, which was amazing. So, you know, had that. And then that consultant, once I came round, came to speak to me, confirmed it was cervical cancer. And again, just, you know, burst into tears. I was, again, am I going to die? And he was great. He said, you know what? It is very treatable and it's very curable. So he was really reassuring in that respect. kind of reassured me that I had a lot going for me in terms of being young, being reasonably fit. And trying to reassure me as much as possible that I would start my treatment soon and, you know, it was treatable. I think it was when I got home in those few weeks after, literally every time I would see my little girl, you would just start to think, sorry, guys, I think it's your mum's, it's like, you would look at that child and just think, what if he is going to grow up without a mum? Like, it's just, it wasn't even, you know, I'm not afraid. I kind of realised that I wasn't really afraid of dying. You think, you know, I'm, when you're faced with the prospect of, you know, a disease that could kill you, I was like, you know what, I don't necessarily fear dying, but I don't want to leave behind this little girl. Yeah. I don't want her to grow up without a mum. Mm. And that was where the sadness really came from, I think. Mm. It wasn't for me, it was for her.
Yeah. And what about your partner? How supportive was he?
Yeah, I mean,
and how was he during it all?
Yeah, like, it was obviously a massive shock to him as well. And you kind of go through that process of, from the initial, I think it's cervical cancer, you then have the next step where it's like, yep, it's cervical cancer. It's then another week of waiting for test results and scans and whatnot. Yep, it's cervical cancer. Initially they said, we think it's stage 2. You then go for MRI, more MRI scans, a PET scan. And then it was like, actually it's 3C. They then come up with your treatment plan. So kind of at every stage, I think he was a little bit like, no. Like at first he's like, no, it's until we get proper confirmation from these test results, it's not. And went into a little bit of denial. And then obviously realised, okay, it is. And he was obviously very upset, but he's just a strong person and was so supportive and kind of went into very practical mode of, you know, he went down to Holland and Barrett and bought me turmeric capsules for anti-inflammation. He was making me blueberry smoothies every day for the antioxidants and things like that. And just an amazing support. And then even when they were doing the staging, when it was like they said it was stage 2, I then had to go for an appointment after I'd had another scan to confirm it was stage 2. And I said to him, I said, what if it's not? What if it is stage 4? Like, what if it's spread further? And he kind of said, do you know what? It doesn't matter. You will still have the same treatment and you will still beat it.
Yes.
So, you know, that's all, you know, all you have to think about. And that was, you know, that was kind of reassuring that you thought, you know what, he is right. Whether it's stage 1, stage 3, stage 4, it would have been the same treatment and it would still have to be the same outcome that I would have to get through it. So
we'll be right back after this short break.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Welcome back to this episode of Made by Mamas. Now, where were we? Talking about treatment, Jo, what did your treatment plan look like? And was there anything that you had any sort of input on? I mean, is it chemotherapy, radiotherapy? How does it work?
Yeah, so I had 5 weeks of radiotherapy. So it was every day, Monday to Friday, go in for a radiotherapy session. And then chemotherapy once a week. So that was every Wednesday for 5 weeks. And then the final stage was actually, it was a thing called brachytherapy, which is targeted internal radiotherapy. So I was in hospital for 3 days. They basically, I don't know how much detail to go into, but they basically put rods inside you to target what's left of the tumour from the chemotherapy, radiotherapy. And then you have, I think I had 3 doses of this internal radiotherapy. So you literally have to lie in a hospital bed for 3 days flat, and they kind of wheel you up and down to get this thing. I mean, it was horrible. It was just like unimaginable. But because it was the last part of your treatment, you're like, right, yeah. Once I'm through this, that's it, done. And yeah, no input. You're basically told this is your treatment plan. You have to sign all these consent forms. They tell you all the side effects that you may have. You know, there's a low chance of this happening, there's a high chance of this side effect, blah, blah, blah. Mm. And it's horrible. You're reading all these things and you're just like, you can lose a leg or that, you know, that's the extreme. Then there's other, you know, side effects just to do with like your bowels and your bladder. And you just think, oh my goodness. And I said to the consultant, I said, I mean, what choice do I have but to sign this? And she was like, obviously you have a choice, but if you don't have the treatment.
And I guess, you said that your partner was quite practical. As soon as, you know, you got your diagnosis, it's like, right, okay, well, we're going to fight this and it's going to all be okay. Did you ever have the conversations of, you know, what if, especially when you're signing these forms and you're suddenly like, oh gosh, this might not work, or it might not go the way we thought it might have gone. Did you have conversations about what you would do if it didn't go to plan? Or
we didn't really. I mean, we this is going to sound terrible, but I think part of our way of dealing with it was having a little bit of dark humor about it. So actually, yeah, those conversations were almost done in jest, where, you know, he would say something like, oh, when you're dead, that sounds terrible, but it was funny. And so, yeah, no, I think we never had it on a serious note, apart from we actually got married.
Oh.
So I finished my treatment at the start of September. We got married at the end of September, but just in a little top secret, just the two of us with Mabel at Chelsea Town Hall.
Lovely.
But that conversation came about where it was like, if I die, it's probably better that we're married, because... Yeah. You know, just for everything with the house, with Mabel, everything's just easier if you've got the official documents. We spoke about it in that respect, which sounds very unromantic. But it was never an option. Like we were just very, we will get through this and it'll be
fine. Did you lose your hair, Jo?
No. So that was after I asked if I was going to die. That was my second question, was whether I was going to lose my hair. I think that's the amazing thing about chemotherapy now and cancer treatment in general. It seems to have, you know, come along from, I think before you would think cancer treatment, you would automatically think of just people with no hair, really, really sick. And I did get pretty sick. I lost quite a lot of weight and things. But yeah, no, that particular chemotherapy I was on, it was a very low chance of losing your hair. So
right.
Wow.
Was that a big thing for you?
Yeah, I think it is. I think, if I had lost my hair, I mean, I guess there's wigs and things like that. But yeah, I mean, it's your hair is part of you, isn't it?
Yes.
So yeah, the fact it was my second question, I think probably could tell how
I'd be the same. I'd be the same.
Yeah, and I think as well, when you've got children, like especially really young ones who don't, you know, you can't really explain to them, oh, I'm going to lose my hair because of this, but actually it's a good thing and I've got no choice. You almost want to keep up appearances, don't you, to your kids?
Well,
you
the less shocking, the better. You don't want them to be looking at you and thinking, what's going on with mummy?
I totally agree.
Yeah.
It was nice that Mabel was of that age where she actually doesn't have a clue what was going on. And that was helpful to me because it meant that I could just try and kind of go into mum mode and almost forget about that while I was having the treatment, because she didn't know what was going on. So to her, everything was just very normal and it helped keep it quite normal for me. But she's funny. If I put my hair in a ponytail, she tries to pull it out because she likes my hair down.
Right.
So I think, can you imagine if I'd lost my hair? She would be like, no idea what was going on.
I love they have such strong opinions on how we should wear our hair already. Mine exactly. Georgia, yours is the same. It's like, I like your hair down, not up.
Yeah. Or even if I remember putting red lipstick on once, where it was like 6:30 in the morning and I was leaving to go to work. And I'd just like gone to say bye to Axel and he went, oh, mummy, what have you drawn on your face? And you're like, oh. Now I feel terrible.
Yeah. Luna did it to me in Kenya. I bought a new dress and I spent like a bit of money on it. I was like, oh, we can treat myself to a new... And I went, oh, mummy. And I was sort of spinning around. I was like, do you like my new dress? And she just went, no.
No.
And I was like, what? Not at all. And she was like, no. And I was like, okay. And then I got really upset. And I turned around to Dozer and Dozer was like, don't cry about it. She's six. Get over it.
At least she's honest as
yeah,
well,
she's
you know?
Honest.
I was just going to ask how old Mabel was when you were having your treatment. Only because I know you were you breastfed, didn't you, until she was two. So did
yes.
that impact that, you know, having to finish? Or I don't know, like, can you breastfeed?
Basically, that was why I had to stop. I had a bit of a weird breastfeeding journey, as they call it, because I wanted to stop when, you know, when you have a baby and you have all these ideas that you're like, oh, I'm going to breastfeed for 6 months or I'm going to,
yeah,
or not breastfeed or whatever. I was kind of like, if I can breastfeed, I can breastfeed. If I can't, I can't. I actually found it quite easy. I think being in lockdown helped a lot because I didn't ever have that pressure of being out and about. I was just at home. I could just, you know, have my bra on and you didn't have to worry about any logistics and things. So yeah, I found breastfeeding relatively easy. But what I wasn't prepared for was how hard it was to stop. So when I went back to work, I went back to work when she was 8 months old and she wouldn't take a bottle. So it was like, how on earth can I go back to work when I've got a baby to feed? And I mean, I had to.
What did you do?
Well, I mean, we spent a lot of money on Amazon trying to buy bottles and different teats. And we tried everything from using breast milk, different kinds of formula, different temperatures. Just would not take this bottle. We did that for a good kind of month or so before I went back to work. Then on the day I was going back to work, I was doing an evening shift. I was just in pieces because I was like, I can't do this. And people were like, oh, she will just get so hungry that she will eventually take a bottle. So my partner just had to deal with it.
Yeah, see ya. I'm off to work.
Yeah, I never had so much mum guilt. Like I was sobbing driving to work thinking, what on earth am I doing? And she didn't take a bottle because she's stubborn. So she eventually just learnt, I think, that when mum wasn't there, she didn't get milk. So luckily, because she was about 8 months old, she was...
Yeah, she's eating.
Yeah.
So Dan, my partner, used to just feed her up on like yogurts and cheese and things and try and like porridge.
How incredible that she didn't take a bottle when you weren't there. Like, that's amazing. Because you never really hear that. You're like, oh, actually, yeah, do you know what? She'll get so hungry. Of course she'll take a bottle eventually.
She didn't give in. Yeah.
Absolutely. Really determined that the boob is the only thing she wanted.
Not, yeah. And I mean, and it's like what you were saying with people giving advice about sleep. Like, people give advice about this. Like, have you tried this? Have you tried that? Like, we have literally tried
Everything.
I bought Amazon.
I'm starting a bottle shop. We have so many bottles at home.
We do things like make him wear my jumper and feed her a bottle to try and make him smell like me. It's like, no, it did not work. But yeah, so when I started the treatment, I just had to stop breastfeeding, which it was, you know, it's sad because as much as I say I wanted to stop, because I was definitely one of these mums that was like, I can't breastfeed a two-year-old. Like, you know, who breastfeeds a two-year-old? But people do. And I wanted to stop. But at the same time, when you're forced into it, it's a different story where you're like, oh. And it was like 4 days of hell where she just screamed. But then by day five, it was just like, she'd never breastfed in her life.
Boob who?
There you go. What's that? Exactly. Boob who? Can I ask you a couple of personal questions? So please feel free to pass on them. But I guess the first one is hopefully you won't pass on this one. Where are you in your recovery? And, you know, and how do you feel? And the second one has having cervical cancer affected you being able to have children, more children?
Yeah, so first question. I finished my treatment, as I said, in September. You then have to wait for 3 months to have a scan. So I had a scan in December, which came back. It's a weird one because they basically think it's all clear. So there's nothing in my lymph nodes. They saw no tumour, which is great. But there was just one little area that was showing, which my consultant thinks is just inflammation. but there's a chance that it could be hiding something. So it's, I'm at that point where it's like, I think I'm all clear, but there's a chance I might not be. So I now have to wait till March for another scan. But historically, they never used to scan at 3 months, is what she was trying to explain to me, because most people will still have inflammation or scar mm-hmm. tissue. Mm-hmm. So she was very reassuring that it was brilliant news. I mean, her opening line was, your scan is as good as we would have hoped for. It's excellent. You know, she was using words like that. So, but it's just that little thing where I'm still, there is still a chance that there could be something lurking. So, yeah, March for another scan. But I'm feeling good. I feel it's funny because, like I said, I wasn't feeling particularly bad before I got diagnosed. But then it's the treatment that completely floors you. But I would say I'm feeling pretty much recovered from the treatment. Got my appetite back really quickly. Managed to put all the weight back on, and I'm managing to do Great. Normal things. I'm back Wonderful at work, news. Which was a huge yeah. thing for me getting back to work. They've been so supportive, which was just amazing. Kind of didn't have to think about work while I was having my treatment. And again, they've kind of, yeah, said I can come back, do as many days as I want and build it up and things. So yeah, no, I'm feeling good. I think maybe psychologically might take just a little bit more to kind of process what's happened and what's happening. But that's something that I'm going to try and deal with. Over the next little while, maybe get some help with some counselling and things that's on offer. The biggest side effect is that I'm now going through early menopause. So you know that as soon as you start treatment, they tell you that you're going to be infertile, which, I mean, I'm 38. So it was always one of those things where we hadn't ruled out having another child. I think we kind of thought we would probably only have one, but we certainly hadn't completely decided. Yeah. And then, yeah, as soon as you're told that, you know, you of course are like devastated because
yes.
it's just that decision being taken away from you. And I think as a woman as well, it's hard to suddenly have to deal with the fact that you are infertile. And yeah, I mean, going through the menopause, that's a whole other podcast episode, isn't it?
Oh, mate, talk about it a lot on this podcast. Yeah. And I guess you can't take HRT?
So I can, actually.
Oh, you can?
I can, yeah. So I only started a couple of weeks ago, though, because, yeah, there's certain types of cancers that are related to hormones that mean yes. you can't take HRT, but with cervical cancer, it's not a hormonal cancer, so you can take HRT.
Well, yeah. message me if you want any advice around hormone replacement therapy, because I'm also in early menopause and I've taken so many different types of potions and tablets and patches and whatever else. So yeah, if you want any advice on that,
will,
I love talking about it as well.
It's a minefield, isn't
yes.
it?
Yeah.
But there's some amazing people doing great work for particularly those going through it early on.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's something, again, it's all quite new to me at the moment, but
yeah.
It's, and I think that's with my recovery as well. Everything that's happening, I'm questioning. I'm like, do I feel like this because of the cancer? Do I feel like this because of the cancer treatment? Do I feel like this because of the menopause? Like, it's so hard to know what is the menopause and what is reality.
Yeah. And also just being a knackered parent of a two and a half year old.
It's a lot in 2.5 years to have had a child, to have had cancer and to be going through the menopause. Like, you know, that's, individually those things are a lot for any person to take on, let alone, you know, all three. So I think you're unbelievable.
Yeah. Me and Georgia are looking at you going, she looks fresh as a daisy.
I know.
Perfectly curled hair, immaculate room behind her. I mean, ours is, you know.
I've locked myself in. This is the spare room that, like, literally no one comes into because Mabel's downstairs. This is probably the only room that she can't hear me in. So.
Brilliant. Now, Jo, let's get on to our products because we love to hear our products on the podcast.
And we know you're prepared. Do you want to tell us what your five favourite products are?
Yeah, it's funny because when we were speaking about doing this, I thought, I can't even remember what products I used when she was a baby. Like, it feels like so long ago. And I'm sorry if these are quite simplistic, but my first one is, it's like Snuggle, is it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
The Snuggle Baby Bath.
Snuggle Baby Bath,
basically. I remember talking to people that had babies and trying to get ideas of what we needed. And quite a few people, this seems to divide people. Quite a few people like, nope, you don't need anything for them in the bath. But I don't know what I would have done without it. Because
what do you do if you don't have a bath? Like, if you don't have a little bath for them? You should hold them.
I mean, there's some people, I think...
Oh my God, you can't hold them. It's like trying to catch a goldfish.
Exactly. Someone recommended them... You're so right.
It's a slippery little sucker.
Someone recommended this sponge. It's like a little sponge support thing. Like, that gives zero support. Like, and we used this bath till she was over one, because she was quite little and she's still quite little. She fits in it for ages. That, for me, it was just, made bath time.
Brilliant.
Easy peasy. Yeah. The sleepy head.
Oh, which is now called?
A docker tot.
A docker tot. My third one, the baby Bjorn bouncer chair.
Brilliant.
Again.
We had that.
Yeah.
It's funny, isn't it? Because these products, some of them are the ones that, if you've been listening to this podcast for a long time, you'll know they come up time and time again. And so... These are the ones. So if you're listening to this now and you're about to have a baby, these are the recommendations. Yeah. They're still going, which is so good.
Yeah, because I just remember, like, what do you do with this baby if you're trying to make dinner? And the bouncer chair is perfect. Just, chuck her in the bouncer chair and then you can actually do things with your two hands.
We had this chair. Is it the Joey? George, we can never say the name of it.
Joey. I remember Googling it, trying to find the pronunciation. Yeah.
Yeah, and then we had to do that job with them and we were like, how the hell do we say the brand?
Anyway,
that one. And it used to just rock Luna. So you strap her in and then it played a little tune, a little melody, and she was in it from like morning till night. Every video I've got of her is her just like swaying back and forth.
Why she loves a roller coaster now.
Yeah. And then I've put stickers as my next
stickers.
One.
Yeah, love
because
that.
Because even from when she was quite little, it would just keep her occupied for ages and ages. And even now, it's my go-to if I want her to, if you're on a plane, I go up to see family in Scotland. It's only an hour on the plane, but it's great. Just give her stickers. She'll stick them all over the place. The supermarket, I remember I'd sit her in the trolley. She would just stick stickers all over the trolley. The worst thing is, though, if you end up going out and you've been playing with stickers and you have them like all over your jeans and you don't notice. And you're just like one on your face and you've been speaking over and you think,
always.
Cool. And then my last one, YouTube, it's for me, it's just the best invention ever for a child. It's scary though, because she can do it all, and you think you're 2 years old and you know how to swipe and swipe along and skip ad and this is
quite incredible.
No judgment parenting, so that's why
I'm YouTube is like dreaming. Yeah, absolutely. There's a reason why, like, what is it, Baby Shark has had like 50 million hits or something. Yeah. It's more than that, I think. But
But I also think it's quite educational. Like, she's learned her alphabet and how to count and things through YouTube. Like, I haven't taught her that.
Kids' YouTube's incredible.
It's amazing.
The other day, I found Kit and Luna watching a program about feelings, and it was talking about, why we get angry, what happens to us inside our body. Then they're watching one about the planet, what we can do to reduce, CO2 emissions or whatever. I don't even know what I'm talking about, but they do. Then they start asking me all the questions and I'm like, shit. Ask your dad.
Google.
Hey, Google. No judgment here. Love that. Now, Jo, piece of advice.
This is a kind of an old quote that I think is just good life advice. This too shall pass is the quote.
Yes.
And I think it's just a reminder that everything is temporary. I hate it when people tell you it's just a phase, but that is essentially what I'm saying.
It is,
because I think when you're in it, it's very difficult to remember that it's just a phase. But I think for everything, like even the good times, you have to remember they're just temporary. So you really have to, soak it
all
in.
Exactly.
And when you're in the bad times as well, just remember it is just temporary and it will pass and you'll be on to something else. But just I think it's just quite good life advice to live.
I really love that.
Amazing. What an amazingly powerful, wonderful conversation. Thank you for being so open and honest.
Thank you for having
sharing.
Me. I hope that even if one person listening, books a smear test now, then that's the reason I want to speak out, just because I want people to realise how important it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Amazing. Brilliant.
Thank you so much.
Jo, thanks
much.
A million. Thank Good luck you. With everything.
Thank you.
Jo Wilson, what a woman.
I know. Like, unbelievable, all of that stuff happening in the space of a couple of years. And how, I mean, she did get upset. She's obviously going to be very upset. It's still very raw and, you know, very real. And she was open that she hasn't actually had the full all clear yet.
Yeah.
But she's just so positive and I guess she's just taking it all in her stride. It's scary interesting
stuff.
Isn't it?
Scary stuff listening to that podcast, because listening to her talk the way she did, I mean, we have all been in that situation where we might have put something off or not got around to doing something that, you know, and that's not Jo's fault in any way, shape or form. That is having a baby, you know, having to wait till 3 months postpartum, people missing the signs, you know, all of that. And suddenly you've been diagnosed with cervical cancer. It's absolutely terrifying. And the way she handled it, I thought was brilliant. Just like very matter of fact, but just like you said, really brave, really inspirational.
Yeah, I find it interesting when we have, you know, people who come on and they've gone through something like this. It's almost like you go into like a, like sort of a fight or, you know, like that kind of, yeah, fighting mentality.
Yeah,
where you just think, right, this has happened to me. Yes, it's really shit, but I have to get on with it. And I don't know if that's because we're parents and we just have to get on with it, or if that is across the board. But, you know, please go for your smear tests.
Yeah,
please.
It's really interesting that you say that, because actually I think hopefully you and I would be the same, you know, if it ever happened to us. But when my mum got diagnosed with breast cancer, I went the other way.
Yeah, but it's somebody else.
I crumbled. I was like, she's going to die. I'm going to lose another parent. This is going to be it. I'm going to be an orphan. It was very hard to keep positive. And everyone kept saying to me, you've got to be a pillar of strength for her. And every time I spoke to her, I was just fucking weeping and wailing down the phone, like, don't leave me. She was like, I'm not going to.
Yeah.
And then she hasn't, you know, she's been amazing. But it's like, yeah, maybe if it happens to yourself, you've got more of that fighting instinct in you. And when it's taken away from you, it's out of your control. It's very hard.
Yeah, and also she said, like, I realised I'm not actually scared to die, but I'm scared of what I was leaving behind. And I think that's probably what happens in your mind. You think, I don't care what happens to me, I just care about, you know, my daughter or whoever who I'm leaving behind.
Are you scared of dying?
No, I'm not. But I am scared. Yeah, I mean, I don't want to die, but I'm not scared of dying, because I don't know, then you're dead. I don't know. No. But I would be petrified knowing that I was going to die if I was leaving behind children and a husband and a family.
Yeah, that's it,
like,
isn't it?
That's what it is. I think when you think about all the things you might miss out on, and oh God, I just couldn't let my mind go there, I don't think. Are you scared to die?
Well, some days I think, is this my last one? Like, I know that sounds morbid. No, but you know. No, as in, I don't mean it. No, but I do think, I'm sorry, George, but we hear horror stories all the time. You know, we only have to turn the telly on to see what can happen in a split second. So some mornings I do think, well, if this is my last one, I'm going to make it a really good one. And I sometimes think, oh, is it going to happen? No, I do think that, because we just don't know. I'm quite positive about it. I like to think that I can get through the day without anything too tragic happening. But you just don't know. So you've got to live every day like it's your last one. Is that a really weird thing to say?
Well, I've never woken up and thought, maybe today's my last day.
No, you're waking up and thinking, how do I get out of this marriage?
Is this my last day of marriage?
It's a marriage woman. Well, listen, we'll kind of maybe open up that conversation, because it is we talk about life. We talk about life constantly on this podcast, having babies and talking about all of that side of it. But actually, we never really touch death. And so...
No, we don't.
Yeah, let's have a think about it. Thank you so much to the wonderful Jo. And let's please keep giving our podcast a little review. If you can rate it as well, that would be amazing. And also following it really helps us because it means you don't miss an episode.
Yeah. And if you've got any suggestions for topics you'd like us to cover, like Zoe's just mentioned, or guests that you've seen that you'd like to hear from, then please do drop us a DM. We're on Instagram at Made by Mamas, and we'll be back on Friday.
Made by Mamas is an Insanity podcast production, and today's episode was produced by the lovely Charlotte Mason.
Insanity Group.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.